Yes, this is the last week of our series, Technology, Social Media, and Your Relationships. Today we're talking about technology, social media, and your loved ones specifically. The people maybe in your immediate family, if you are a parent here on Mother's Day, or also spouses or extended family members, your parents, siblings, cousins, etc., how technology and social media is affecting our relationship with our loved ones and how we can live wisely in this time. And I do want to acknowledge again, as I did in the prayer here on Mother's Day, of course, we wish a happy Mother's Day to moms, don't we? Happy Mother's Day, moms. Happy Mother's Day to you. And somebody sent me an email a couple of weeks ago reminding me of the realities of Mother's Day for lots of folks. And for some, it is entirely celebratory, and they have a great relationship with their mom, and she's with us, and they have a great day. And for others, Mother's Day is a little more complicated. The person who emailed me in our congregation actually works in foster care and helping children find homes, and she talked about the realities of that, mothers who lose their children to the foster care system and mothers who take them in. And then, of course, we have people in our congregation who lost their mother this year. And we have people who didn't have such a great relationship with their mother. And we have people who would like to be parents, but they haven't been able to be parents. So Mother's Day is one of those days where it can kind of, you can feel ambivalent in some ways. But if it's celebratory for you, then oh, celebrate. But just wanted to acknowledge that that's how many of us may feel. And this is not really a Mother's Day sermon, per se. This is a sermon for everybody. Of course, it'll apply to moms, but it applies to everyone. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that and the emotion around the day. And I'm celebrating today, celebrating my wife and how she's such a gift. I feel a little down, though, I'll be honest with you. I lost my coffee carafe early this morning. I'm having a lost coffee emergency right now. I do not have the normal caffeine high that I normally have before a sermon. Isn't that a horrible thing for a pastor to say? But it's true, and so I was grabbing some coffee out there. But this is a wonderful day in so many ways and complicated for some and others. And so today, we're finishing up this series in technology, social media, and our relationships. And every week, we've said, you probably have a love-hate relationship with this. And with technology in general, there are aspects of technology that I absolutely love, like being able to stay in touch with family at a distance and friends, and we have our church membership class online, and we have an online congregation right now joining us, and so there are all kinds of things that I'm thankful for about social media. And at the same time, we all know that we probably spend more time on social media than we would care to admit. We spend more time looking at screens than we would care to admit. And we know for sure that technology has affected our relationships. Yes, positively, but also negatively. Some of us have experienced the division that takes place when propaganda and misinformation and false news are shared over social media. And we see what that does to our families. If you have children like I do, I have a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I'll talk about it today, social media and children and teenagers, and there are a lot of things to be concerned about. And most of all, we don't want technology to distract us from the people that we love. And so in this series, we've been talking about living wisely with technology and understanding, most of all, if we can use technology for the better, we want it to enhance our relationships with the people that we love. So today, as we talk about this topic, I'm going to focus on two relationships. First, and somewhat quickly, relationships with your children, if you're a parent or a grandparent, aunt, uncle, relationships with any young people in your life, children or teenagers. I want to focus on that relationship quickly. And then the rest of the time, I want to focus on maybe spouse, immediate family, or extended family like your parents, your siblings, people who are in your family orbit. So children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and then immediate and extended family. So I lived with my mother and my grandma and grandpa until I was 6 years old. If you've been around the church for a while, you have talk about my grandparents all the time. I was close with my mom and my grandparents, and My grandmother passed away in 2007, incidentally, the same year that the iPhone was invented. And as I was preparing this sermon, I kind of thought to myself, what would she think of social media? Have you ever thought that, about family who have passed on? And what if they were living in today? Like, I think my grandpa would love iPads. Like, he was always buried in a newspaper. And I think he would love iPads. And at the same time, I wonder, how would my grandmother react to social media and what it has done to so many families, including her family? Because like many of you, probably you have people in your family who are really the glue of the entire family. Do you know what I mean? They are the hub that keep the entire wheel of the family turning. And so since my grandmother passed, I don't think we've had any large gatherings as an extended family since then. She was the one who brought everybody together, aunts and uncles and cousins. And so that is probably natural, but at the same time, the internet and social media and the times that we live in have affected our family in other ways. One of my extended family members, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, changed his Facebook profile pic to a Confederate flag. And he lives in Ohio, which was in the Union, by the way. But that's funnier to me than it is to you, apparently. But I got a kick out of that. And he changed his profile picture to the Confederate flag. And our family roots are kind of Southern, and I get it. And so he's claiming affinity with that at a time in our country's history in which we're seeing nationalism on the increase and overt racism expressed and more of that, what existed at that time and what that flag represents. And I don't usually unfriend people, and I don't remember unfriending him, but I know we're not Facebook friends anymore. And I guess he unfriended me. And you know, my grandmother would be torn up about that. First of all, she wouldn't have been happy with him posting that flag. But she'd also be torn up about the fact that we're not Facebook friends anymore, whatever that means. You know, it means something socially. That would deeply bother her, I'm sure. She would despise the way that technology and social media have been used, again, for goods in some ways, but used in other ways to bring so much division and pain. And there's a common experience in this congregation of estrangement from family members. Not everybody, of course, but many of you have had strained relationships with family or family that you don't really talk to anymore. It may be over religion and politics. It could be over sexuality. It could be just because you're different than the rest of your family. But many of you here feel the ache of a lost relationship. This is a rhetorical question. I won't ask for a show of hands, but how many of us here have essentially lost a relationship over the past 5 years due to religion and politics? I would imagine it's close to 100%. And so we feel the sting of that, the effect of tech and social media on our relationship. And then it affects us in other ways as well, of course. So back during spring break, Hannah and I took the boys to an amusement park in Southern California, and we went to a restaurant to get lunch at that amusement park, and two things surprised me. First, the sandwich was $15. That is amusing at the amusement park. Talk about inflation. And second, while we were waiting in line, I was surprised but not surprised. There was a family of four ahead of us, and we were all waiting in line for the food, and so it was kind of boring. There wasn't a whole lot going on, but there were two parents and two teenagers, and they were all just looking at their phones the whole time they were in line and never talked to each other, and all four people in the family just looking at their phones, and we would inch forward. We were in line for maybe a good 15 minutes, and I thought, you know, I don't want to judge them. I mean, maybe they're having the time of their lives, and this is just kind of the down few minutes, and they're catching up on their phones real quick, and then they're going to have a great time together. That could be the case. But the picture that it presented was, you know, this is a family outing at an amusement park. This is like the time we make memories. These are the times when we're older, when we're going to have these little flashes of memories back in the good times, the good old days. That's right now. And I thought, you know, they're all buried in their cell phones, and I just hope that that wasn't the way that the rest of their day went. But it's likely that, you know, one of them someday is going to kind of have the self-awareness to think, you know, oh, we grew up and we had all that time together and we spent too much time looking at screens. Remember that time we went to that amusement park? We were all looking at screens. They weren't self-aware in that moment, but I bet you at least one of them will be in the future. And I thought, you know, we don't want to do that. There's probably times when other people have looked at me and my family and we've been doing that. And I don't want to do that. I want something better for my family. That was my takeaway. Just kind of, you know, lift your head up from the screen, Ryan, and ask yourself, how would your time be better spent? So at least a couple of the ways that the internet and tech affects our relationship with our loved ones. I want to share a scripture today that speaks to the very real situation that a lot of families find themselves in, that it's complicated. In 2023 America, different views and division and judgment, and then many of us kind of feeling like we're tethered to these things and spend too much time looking at screens, and relationships with our loved ones, especially in a day like Mother's Day, can be complicated. So I'm going to read a scripture that you might be familiar with. I think a lot of people are not. It doesn't get a whole lot of attention, but it's definitely a scripture that expresses complexity. So let's read it together. From Mark chapter 3, verses 20 through 34, we'll skip a few verses in the middle. And this is about Jesus and his family. And then Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered, so that he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him, for they said, he is out of his mind. And then we'll skip to verse 31. Then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, your mother and brothers are outside looking for you. Who are my brother and my brothers? Jesus asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him and said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. I will ask for a show of hands this time. How many of you have read or heard that passage before? A good half, excellent. I would say that this is a passage that doesn't get a whole lot of airtime in church. Would you agree? And you can see why. I mean, when you read okay. This is not a picture of Jesus and his family in a nice pretty package with a bow that is easy to preach. This is an interesting, really interesting, complex family situation that we have here. And I think for that reason, a lot of pastors don't really deal with it. And so many of us haven't really heard that. It's interesting, even beyond that, how the New Testament came together. The best theory of how the Gospels were written is that Mark came first, and then Matthew and Luke borrow heavily from Mark, and then John kind of does his own thing. So Mark, Matthew, and Luke are called the Synoptic Gospels, which means seeing together. And when you read Matthew and Luke, you have already read over 90% of Mark. Matthew and Luke would have gotten kicked out of college for plagiarism because they borrow so heavily from Mark. There are only a few things they don't take from the Gospel of Mark. This is one of those things. You have any guesses as to why that might be? One of the theories is called embarrassment. In Bible scholarship, that this is just a little too complex. Now, later in the Gospels, we read that Mary is there with Jesus at his crucifixion. And then we know from church history in the book of Acts, Jesus' brother, or his half-brother, James, became the leader of the church in Jerusalem, which makes sense that they're following Jesus and then they would follow his brother. That makes sense. And so we know that things got fixed. There was some reconciliation. There was understanding. We know that was the case later, but this is a complex story. Matthew and Luke were like, no thanks. We'll just leave that in Mark. And so if you were to approach Jesus during this time and you were to ask him, Jesus, how's your relationship with your family? I think he would say, it's complicated. Like many people feel on Mother's Day. And maybe that's the best place to start. When it comes to tech, social media, and our loved ones, it's complicated. In the times that we live in, the information that gets shared and just all of our habits and the time that we spend on it and how it can pull us away from our families, like the amusement park, it's complicated. It's true of all relationships, but especially in the times that we live in. And Mark 3 speaks about how family relationships can disappoint us and how there can be misunderstandings and miscommunications and judgment. It speaks about how we relate to our children, our parents, our siblings, how you could apply it to extended relationships around us. And so first, I do want to talk about relationships with kids and teenagers quickly here. We talked about this on week two of the series. Not everybody's a parent here, but if you're a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, etc., you have influence over a young person's life. And just quickly want to talk about, one more time, children and teenagers and social media. So a few weeks ago, I created a YouTube and TikTok account for my son's music. They play music together, and they recently played in their school talent show, and they did great, and we're super proud of them. I basically stopped myself from making you watch a video of my kids today. I showed restraint. Like, they're a captive audience. I'm not going to make them watch it. I posted on social media everywhere anyway. But we're so proud of them, and I created social media accounts to share their music, to get it out there. And my plan was to turn over control of the social media accounts to my oldest son. He's 12. Turn them over to him when he turns 13. And so I created a TikTok account. And it took me approximately 1.5 seconds to realize there's no way I could ever turn a TikTok account over to my 13-year-old son. It would be like handing him a grenade. There's just no way that I could do that. And it was a surprise to me. You know, I'm 45, and I was shocked. And back on week two of this series, I shared some statistics about social media and teenagers, and we are not preparing young people to handle the realities of social media and the internet. We're not preparing them well. The suicide rate has climbed rapidly since the invention of the iPhone. A lot of these studies were conducted in 2017 because it was 10 years after the invention of the iPhone. And the suicide rate among younger people has quadrupled, friends, during that time. And when they interview young people about their experience, they're finding what really is common sense if you just put yourself in the shoes of a young person. One psychologist said, like all of us, but think about this as a teenager, teenagers are receiving real-time data on how cool and attractive other people think they are. No, thank you. You remember what life was like if you're like my age at 14? No, thank you. Adding that layer, it's no wonder that the suicide rate has climbed. And just the climate that it has created, there's so much vitriol in society. And then it used to be if you were bullied, at least you could go home. And now the internet makes bullying a possibility 24/7 as long as they're on social media. And we need to help our children live in a social media world. So if you're a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, Proverbs 22:6 says, start children off, or the old version, train up a child the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Now, we wish that was a promise. We wish that it was a guarantee that we could train a child in the way they should go and they won't depart from it. It's not a promise, but it is general wisdom. And what it means is training up a child, being an example for them, walking with them, helping them walk down the path, helping them process experiences, helping them develop good judgment and critical thinking skills and self-esteem and self-respect so that they can be prepared for the experience that they're having in our world. So for me, as I think about technology and social media and my loved ones and specifically my children, here's what it says to me. If I have children, my overall relationship with them sets the tone for specific issues like social media, where I can train them and help them to navigate life in this world. If they see me as the parental rule setter, and we really don't have a close relationship, but I'm just kind of the king from on high, making decrees, and because your dad said so, and that's the experience they have of me, and then lots of other hours of the day, I'm just doing this, and I'm just buried in a screen, and take time away to set some rules for them, that's not really going to work for them. That's not training a child up in the way they should go. And back on week one, I challenged all of us to count, just at least for one day, the amount of time we spend on social media. I did that right before that sermon, and then I asked you all, do you want to know how much time I spent? And then I'm like, I'm not telling you, because I'm embarrassed, because it was more than I thought. And I guarantee that would be the case for you. But as I think about my relationship with my children, I'll apply it to me. How much time am I spending on the internet and social media, and am I training them? Am I investing in them? Am I training them not only how to live life in general, but how to navigate life in this world? Children and teenagers need loving influences in their lives to start them off in the way they should go, like never before. And so I think about, how am I doing that when I read about Jesus' life and when I read about training up a child? So now to the other types of relationships with loved ones, spouses, siblings, extended family, etc., technology, social media, and these relationships. Over the past few years, my guess is most of us have probably tried our absolute hardest and pulled our hair out and stressed over this and done our absolute best to manage a balancing act. Let me see if this is true of you. One side of that balancing act is, well, we don't have to agree on everything in order to have a relationship with somebody. That's one side of the balancing act. Have you thought that? Have you felt that at all? That pull, well, I don't have to agree with everybody. I agree on everything in order to have a relationship with somebody. And so that's one side of the balancing act, and that's true. I mean, two people will rarely agree on everything. I'm not sure I agree with myself on everything. I've changed my mind. I grow. That's a good thing. There's a saying, where you have two pastors, you have three opinions. That's probably true of me as well. I don't know everything, and I probably don't agree with myself over everything, and I'm not going to agree with everybody else on everything. Next week, we're going to welcome special guest Josh Scott, who's been a friend of mine for years. He's a pastor in Nashville. I greatly value him, his writing. He's got a new book coming out. I value his thoughts that he shares on social media. I don't agree with him on everything. We don't agree on every theological point, but I value him and his book, and so that's why he comes here. If the criteria to bring a guest speaker here is that I have to agree with them on everything, or the criteria to discuss a book, I have to agree with them on everything, we wouldn't have any guest speakers. We wouldn't be able to read any books. So one side of that balancing act is, no, we don't have to agree on everything in order to have a relationship with someone. I think if my grandma were living today, and she would say to me, you know, I know you don't like his Facebook profile photo, but you guys do have some things in common. You are family, and maybe you could at least talk to him about this and find out why, you know, he unfriended you and at least try. And I think she would be right. I think she'd be right. I'll be honest with you. I didn't reach out to him. When I saw that, I was so disgusted. I'm like, dude, what are you thinking, man? This is ridiculous. I think I'm right. But still, I didn't reach out to him. So I think she could rightly say that. You know what? Why don't you try? You don't have to agree on everything, and maybe you could persuade him. Maybe you could have a talk, and maybe he wouldn't do that anymore. So that's one side of the balancing act. And let me see if there's another side of this balancing act that you've struggled to manage. There are times when boundaries need to be set because you don't want to participate in evil. Have you felt that? And so we walk this balance beam, don't we? With extended family and or maybe closer family. And, well, we want to have a relationship. We don't have to agree on everything in order to have a relationship. And at the same time, this person is saying and doing things that I can't participate in. I'm not okay with those conversations. I'm not okay with those social media posts. I'm not okay with the misinformation they're sharing. We can agree to disagree, and that's fine. But if it's something that is perpetuating evil, it's not just a disagreement anymore. There's a meme that expresses this well. It's misattributed to James Baldwin, but maybe you've seen a meme that has this quote. We can disagree and still love each other. Unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist. Robert Jones Jr. is the person who actually tweeted that. But it expresses the conundrum, doesn't it? The balancing act. With the reality of the internet and social media and a day like Mother's Day and when we think about family and extended family, how do I manage this balancing act? I want to have a relationship. We don't have to agree on everything. And at the same time, I can't participate in evil. I could have said to my grandma, you know, at the height of this resurgence of nationalism in the United States, he's posting a picture of the Confederate flag. And I think he is willfully joining a group of people who are tearing this country apart, and they are fueled by racism. And grandma, I don't want to have any participation in that. So I could have said that back to her, and that's the balancing act. It's one of the most difficult experiences that we've had, I think, over the past few years, is realizing there are people that, you know, yeah, we could probably always do a better job of reaching out. Maybe some of us do a good job. And then there are times when you simply can't anymore. There are times when you have the excruciating realization that you can't really have, the theological phrase would be table fellowship with people anymore. We're going to take communion later, and I would never deny people communion. We don't even practice communion that way. But I think of my family member identifying with the Confederacy and all of this ridiculousness. You know, us sitting down at a meal together seems strange. Like, no, there are things we need to talk about before we can really sit down and have fellowship with one another. And then I feel guilty about that. It's the balancing act. How do I manage that relationship? And I think, you know, the Bible doesn't say thou shalt have dinner with fascists. I'm not required to do that. I don't have to tolerate racist jokes. You don't have to hang out with people who mistreat you, people who are trolling you. But it's that balancing act. How do we manage this? My wife, this isn't a family member, but it's a really close friend, a college roommate, and somebody she was really close to. Over the past few years, her friend started just really getting really vocal on social media, and then my wife would post something about, you know, being a teacher and wishing people would wear masks and how we can get past the pandemic, and it's tough on kids and it's tough being a teacher. Let's get past this. And then her friend from college would promote some kind of misinformation and propaganda, and then basically troll my wife's Facebook. And just kept doing this, and my wife would have these discussions with her on Facebook and comment after comment, and then she would just share more misinformation on my wife's posts. You know, I mean, this all sounds so juvenile, doesn't it? It's the world we live in. And my wife was torn up about it, and she's like, we were so close. It just hurts that she's acting this way. It's like she doesn't even see me for our friendship anymore. She sees me as just somebody to disagree with. She sees me as like a political enemy now. And I finally said to her, you know, you have given her ample opportunities. You have argued with her, and you've been nice, you know, presenting information to her and reached out to her privately, and she's like trolling you now. And I said to my wife, you don't owe her anything. You don't owe her anything. And I said, you block her. And again, it sounds so juvenile. We have to have these conversations about blocking people. But it's just the reality. When you realize that you can't walk that balancing act with people, that it's not just a disagreement anymore. This is crossed into, I'm not going to perpetuate evil. I'm not just going to get trolled by a person all the time. I'm not going to be an outlet for their propaganda. They've drank the Kool-Aid. And it cuts you to the heart. How could this happen? And I think of what would my grandma say? And she would try to get me to reconcile as much as possible, mend those relationships. And I think for me that it is that balancing act. And I've fallen off in both directions, I think, more than I would care to count. But it is that balancing act. As followers of Jesus, we always have this one pull that we want to reconcile people with people whenever possible, whenever we can. Paul writes a very realistic verse in Romans chapter 12. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, he has to give qualifiers, live at peace with everyone. That's a realistic verse, isn't it? If possible, as far as it depends on you, the best you possibly can, he's just kind of qualifying, live at peace with everyone, because we know how hard it is. My friends in recovery would say, clean your side of the street, and then you're not responsible for that other person's behavior. But we do everything we can. I think my grandma would have been right. I could just hear her saying it to me. Ryan, you should have reached out to him. If you see him doing something like that, reach out to him. Let him know you love him. And what you're seeing, you can't support. I'm really concerned about what I'm seeing for you or from you. And you know, love him and try to persuade him. Try to give him a chance. I didn't really do that. I think she's right, though. And then I think I kind of did consider. And then I just imagine, well, I know what he's going to say back. It's not going to be pretty. But I wrote him off before I even tried. So I think she's right on that side of the balancing act. And there, you know, there's a friend of mine. I'll call him Kyle. He lives in California. His name starts with a K, and I see Kyle, so I'm just going to steal your name, Kyle, and call him Kyle. And he said that a few years ago, of course, around the same time that this was happening in all of our lives, he noticed that his parents were becoming different. He said they never really used to care about all this political stuff. They never really talked about it. And he's like, now every time I get together with them, that's all they want to talk about. My dad launched into this angry rant about something that's not even true. It's not even real. He's like, they've been watching their favorite cable news channel, and it has changed them. And he's like, I just can't believe it. They were never like this before. And that there's an epidemic of that nationally. There have been articles written about that where people have essentially lost their parents to quote-unquote cable news. And as I was thinking about this sermon, what's a story I could tell about this side of the balancing act, giving people a chance, and as far as it depends on us? And maybe I could find some super rare story where they couldn't talk at dinner time, and then they had a conversation, and then everything was great after that. It was a complete 180, and everything was rosy, and that would be a good sermon story, wouldn't it? But I thought, you know, how realistic is that? I know that does happen some, but it's a low percentage probably. And so I thought I'd tell his story, because he said right around the time of the last presidential election, he had a heart-to-heart with his parents. And he said, Mom and Dad, I love you. You have been amazing to me. I thank God every day for the way you raised me, the example you were to me. You've poured into me, and I want to be like you in so many ways. And he said, but I just noticed over the past few years there's been a change. You seem angrier about this stuff that you're seeing on TV or these chain emails. And you want to talk about these things. And I just see more people in our country getting sucked into this anger. And I just don't want to see that happen to you. Now, would you like to know how that turned out? He said they got slightly a little bit better. That's how it turned out. They got slightly a little bit better. A little less angry at dinners. They talked about it a little less. And he's like, I'll take it as a dub. I'll put a check in the win column. And then maybe we can talk about it some more. That's it. And I think for many of us, that might be a realistic good solution. For that side of the balancing act, that might be the expectation. No, I'm not going to tolerate racist jokes. No, I'm not going to tolerate misinformation. I'm going to have to come back at that every time. But I love you, and maybe we can agree on some things, and maybe the things that I'm troubled by, maybe I can get you to rethink those things. And if there's one less racist in the world, well, then that's a win. So that's that side of the balancing act. But then there is that other side. And that's the side that many of us have experienced. and continue to, and let's be honest, we probably will again over the next couple of years. If persuasion and reconciliation is not possible, then you set boundaries. And like Jesus, at this particular time in his life in Mark 3, you embrace an alternate family, an alternative family. Now, Jesus' family, apparently they were eventually reconciled. But for the time being, in Mark chapter 3, Jesus embraced an alternative family. Verse 34 says, he looked at those seated in a circle around him and he said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. He looked around him at his spiritual community and he said, these are my brothers and sisters and my mother and father, I guess, and you know, my family. Whoever does God's will, that's my family. And for some of you, that is the side of the balancing act that you've had to fall on many times when the attempts at reconciliation or persuasion, it didn't really work. And so now it's a question of setting boundaries. And now what will community look like? We all need community. We can't be alone. And so what's that new family going to look like for you? For some of you, I hope, that's here. That's the well. For some of you online, that's here. It's a church community. Maybe it's a connect group here. We're getting ready to launch new connect groups the week of June 4th. They'll last for 6 weeks. You can get information at the website, wellchurch.org. Maybe it's a ministry we just launched earlier this month, WellGBTQ+, for people in the LGBTQ community. And they meet in person and online Tuesday evenings. When we were planning that, we had discussions like, you know, what's the minimum number of people you need? Like, what if only like 3 or 4 people show up? Like, is that enough for a group? And last week they had like 22. They're going to have to knock out a wall to manage all the people. And it's going to grow, like spread like wildfire. We're launching a new ministry next month called Girls Night Out, where every month, I heard a woo right there. You can say it louder. It's okay. It's Girls Night Out every month. Ladies in the church are invited to get together and they're just going to kind of hit up some cool spot once a month and just have fellowship and conversation and have a good time. And their first event's coming up in June. You can go to wellchurch.org and get information about Girls Night Out. But if that side of the balancing act is your best option with family and you've attempted a reconciliation, but it hasn't worked, then there are boundaries that need to be set, but God has a family for you. You are not alone. You are not alone. Like Jesus, whoever does God's will is my mother and my brothers and my sisters. You are loved and you belong and you are not alone. I'll close with this. So we have an invitation to free ourselves from slavery to a screen and focus on the people we love the most. And this series has been beneficial to me. I'll just share transparently. I've been helped by studying this information. I hope you have too. And in closing, it reminded me of a movie we took our boys to a few years ago. Back in 2018, Incredibles 2 came out. Who's seen Incredibles 2? It's my youngest son's first movie in a theater, actually. And so it's a sweet memory for that. And it's about a family. It's about a family who are secretly superheroes. And Helen and Bob and their three kids. And if you haven't seen Incredibles 2, you have about 15 seconds to see it before I spoil it for you. And so the mother, Helen, her superhero identity is Elastigirl. And she's originally recruited in Incredibles 2 by a media corporation to reform the public's view of superheroes. They have a negative view of superheroes, and she's a pleasant, good personality, and she's going to help present superheroes in a better light. But she encounters a villain named Screenslaver. And it's a kid's movie, and you know, I'll go for simple metaphors, sure. I mean, I get exactly what's going on here. Good, I need the message. So the villain is Screenslaver, who has the ability to control people's attention and brainwash them through screens. He hacks into monitors, Screenslaver hacks into monitors, TVs, phones, etc., and projects hypnotic images and controls henchmen using goggles that are placed over their eyes. And as Helen, or Elastigirl, zeroes in on who she thinks is Screenslaver, the actual Screenslaver appears and places goggles over Helen's eyes and begins attacking her family. And as she controls Helen through these goggles and distracts her and enslaves her to the screen, the villain begins attacking Helen's family. Watch, since it became, I just cry so easily now. In the climactic scene, her baby, Jack-Jack, who's like the most powerful one of all of them, he has these awesome, phenomenal superhero powers. He's like this little cute little baby. He comes in, and it's her little baby, Jack-Jack, who removes the goggles from her eyes, freeing her from Screenslaver's control. And I thought, you know, as I use social media and so on, and let my boys remove those goggles from my eyes. You know, I use it for good things, and there are lots of good things, but am I using it too much? And am I developing my relationship with them that they need from their parent in the times that we live in? Let our loved ones, as much as possible, be the ones who remove the goggles from our eyes. If, you know, in the case of my friend who was talking to his parents, and they're seeing all kinds of hateful information that are creating, and they're repeating it, and it's creating distance between them and their adult children. It was an opportunity where, to some degree, they let their son remove those goggles from their eyes. It is often our dearest loved ones who were able to see more clearly. It was her baby who freed her from being a slave to a screen because she loves her kids more than screens. That was clear. Oh, I love my kids more than screens. I love my family more than screens. And she was able to go on and protect her family and defeat Screenslaver. And there are many things to be thankful for when it comes to tech and social media, but it's also taken a toll on our relationship. It adds difficulty to the lives of children and teenagers, and we need to be good examples to them and start them off in the way that they should go. It's for some, their lives hang in the balance. And there are families who have been divided over propaganda and false news spread over TV and the internet and social media. And we walk this balancing act of living at peace with everyone as much as possible and trying to be reconciled to them, but confronting the nonsense and the racism and the ridiculousness and the misinformation. And at the same time, it doesn't always work. We can agree to disagree up to a certain point, but we can't participate in evil. And so there are times, like when Jesus said, we need an alternative family. And he looked around at those who want to follow God, who want to follow him and be good, decent people, and said, these are my mother and my brothers and my sisters. This is my family. You are loved. You belong. You are not alone. And you have a family here. Let's pray. God, thank you for this message and that you give to us through Mark chapter 3. God, we thank you that Mark wasn't afraid to put down a complex story. God, as we take communion here in a moment together, may it dramatize our relationship with you, but also our union, our community, with people who want to follow you, who want to do your will, like Jesus said. When we've been hurt or disappointed by family who didn't seem wanted to do that, we can have an alternative family. And oh God, as we take communion, we celebrate not only our union with you, but our community with that alternative family. And we thank you for what it means to us in Jesus' name. And on the night Jesus was betrayed, he took bread as he shared a meal with his disciples, and he thanked God for it, and he broke it, and he said, this is my body broken for you. As often as you eat, remember me. Let's eat of the bread. In the same way, he took the cup and he said, this is my blood of the new covenant shed for the forgiveness of sins. As often as you drink it, remember me. Let's drink from the cup. Oh God, we thank you that you gave us communion to dramatize relationships. Our relationship with you and our relationship with other people. And communion shows us what we mean to you, that you gave all in some way on behalf of us. And it shows that relationships do create brokenness. And there is pain. But when there's reconciliation, there's also cause for celebration. And even in the pain, when there's not, that's not the end of the story. Because you give us a community. We see that word in communion. You give us a community, a new family, who are my mother and brothers and sisters, all of you, and everybody who does God's will. That's my family. You give us the gift of each other, whether we're in person or online, and whether it takes place in connect groups or LGBTQ or girls' night out or ministry teams, road crew, well kids, however it takes place, you give us, God, an alternative family. We are not alone. We are loved and we belong and we have a family. And we thank you for the healing power of that message in Jesus' name. Everybody said, amen.